Hello, sweet friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast. News break. Let's start this episode off with some serious bullshit that just got puked all over this country by the reptilians over there at the DEA. Actually, I think reptilian is too friendly a term for any group of people that would choose to keep marijuana out of the bloodstreams of their society. Reptilians, at least reptilians, the idea behind reptilians is they're some kind of intergalactic, extraterrestrial, super advanced species. At least they've got spaceships. The people over the DEA, they're sitting in their comfortable leather chairs, smoking cigars, and reaping the benefit that comes from stealing the property of human beings that are growing or ingesting or have in their possession a substance that has been shown to be very beneficial for human beings on every single level, from treating PTSD to helping certain types of seizures to helping people who are dealing with the nausea and loss of appetite that comes from radiation therapy and chemotherapy, or as a creativity drug, or as something to amplify the experience of sex or eating food, or just something that's fun to inhale before you play video games. Here's the article. The Drug Enforcement Administration has denied two petitions to reclassify marijuana as a less dangerous drug. Marijuana will remain a Schedule I drug, the most restrictive category under federal drug control laws. Schedule II drugs include Ritalin, Adderall, and oxycodone, among other drugs. So the DEA is telling us that marijuana is as dangerous as heroin, oxycodone, Ritalin, and Adderall. That's what they want us to accept. A group of armed men and women, a group of people who have imbued upon them the power to confiscate the property of people who have certain substances in their possession. A group of people who have destroyed the lives of countless human beings. A group of people who can pull up in front of your house in militarized vehicles, kick down your door, shoot your dog, maybe even your cat, depending on how big it is or what kind of mood they happen to be in, and take all your stuff, rip your kids away from you, put handcuffs on you, and take you to a federal dungeon where they can take away years and years and years of your life for having in your possession a substance that is absolutely harmless and grows from the sweet soil of our beautiful planet Earth. These people with that level of power want us to accept their assessment of a drug that is being shown again and again and again to be incredibly beneficial. This brings to mind a Ray Kurzweil quote that I keep thinking of, which is that things aren't getting worse. Information is getting better. In the old days, prior to the internet, if some federal agency spit out some nonsense about this substance or that substance, you kind of just had to accept it because you didn't have the ability to instantly connect to a network of information and to determine whether or not the statement by the federal government was accurate or not. But now we know. You just have to do a quick Google search to find all the data and research you need, or maybe you could, God forbid, use your own personal experience as a way to determine what is real and what is not real. Either way, with just a very small amount of exploration into this topic, you will quickly discover that marijuana is certainly not as dangerous as oxycodone. Now, you might want to decide for yourself what makes a thing dangerous. Maybe how many people have died consuming the thing. I think that's a pretty good watermark of danger. There's some other things you could look at too, but let's just say how many people have died from consuming the thing. You do the Google search. I'm not going to do it. you do the Google search. Look up how many people have overdosed on oxycodone in the last year versus how many people have died from marijuana overdoses in the last year. Then go back and look at the DEA's classification of marijuana as something more dangerous than oxycodone and gaze upon one of the horsemen of the apocalypse. Things aren't getting worse. Information is getting better. And here's what's going on. Because information is getting better, and because now we don't have the sweet, sacred denial offered to us by the government. In other words, we can't stick our fucking heads in the sands of delusion and pretend that marijuana is as dangerous as heroin or oxycodone, because we know that the research is out there to show us that it certainly isn't. So that means that we're forced into two forms of action when the federal government does things like this. We have to take action. One action that you can take is complacency. That's what you can do. Because you know that marijuana is certainly not as dangerous as heroin, because you know that marijuana is certainly not as dangerous as oxycodone, and yet the DEA has decided to classify it as being that dangerous and to continue to enforce it as though it were that dangerous, which means that they can continue to take people's homes, take people's cars, take people's children, and destroy people's lives for a drug that is definitely not harmful. At least not on the level that they're claiming that it is. You have to become complacent. In the same way in North Korea, people who know that Kim Jong-un wasn't brought down to some beautiful snowy peak on the back of a dragon, that he doesn't shit rose petals and piss diamonds. In the same way that people there know that, but they have to say that he does, because if they don't, they're gonna get taken to a fucking labor camp. In the same way now in this country, you have to become complacent. That's your one choice that you have. You become complacent. You just sit back and think, well, those folks over at the DEA, I guess they've got our, they know something I don't know. I guess that they've got our best interests at heart. That's the federal government. I'm just going to trust my government. You get to do that. You get to, even though the data isn't out there, you get to live a life where you complacently accept what the federal government tells you is right and what the federal government tells you is wrong, and pretend that they must know more than you do, even though you know that's not the truth. So complacency, that's one option that we have here. Just sit back and do nothing. The second option you have is rebellion. There's nothing in between. There's nothing in between. Now that we have true data on the health benefits of marijuana, now that it's all out there for us to see in plain view, now that we know that this is not a substance as dangerous as oxycodone, if the DEA is saying that it is, then we know that the DEA is full of shit. We know that the DEA is making decisions that aren't based on the health of the people, but based on the DEA making money from confiscating people's property and from whatever they may be getting from lobbyists, from Big Pharma, who want to keep marijuana illegal because they know that marijuana is a safe and economic alternative to the poisons that they're spitting out of their fucking factories into the bloodstreams of so many people who are in a lot of pain for various reasons, and they go to a fucking doctor, and the doctor prescribes to them oxycodone or Vicodin, or the doctor prescribes to them some other, maybe an SSRI, some antidepressant that they're going to get addicted to, or maybe an anti-anxiety medication that they're going to get addicted to, because there's no alternative, because they can't prescribe marijuana, even though they know that marijuana could function as a painkiller. It can function as something to help people sleep. It could function as a thing to help people combat alcoholism. It can function in so many different ways. A doctor, knowing that, cannot prescribe that because depending on what state they're in, because the DEA has made the decision to classify this substance as a Schedule 1 drug. So not only is the DEA going to increase their profit margin by keeping this a Schedule 1 drug, but the DEA is going to increase the level of suffering of the people living in this country who don't have access to a drug that can help them fight pain. I speak as someone who has experienced the positive benefits of marijuana, not just as a creativity drug, not just as a wonderful recreational drug, but as someone who has gotten radiation therapy. Now, if you've never gotten radiation therapy, and I'm sorry, I think we talk about this in the podcast, but I'm obviously a little passionate about this topic, so I think it's even worth saying it twice. When you get radiation therapy, you feel like shit. You're getting radiation shot into your body, and your body doesn't like radiation. You get tired. You get nauseated. You don't feel like eating. You feel sluggish. You feel like shit. Now, when I was getting radiation therapy, they prescribed a drug to me, and maybe my brain has blocked it out. I can't remember the name of the drug. Some kind of Trizza something, Zizzle. Sounds like the name of a demon, you know? Zizakatan or Bizafidel. Some monstrous drug that you're supposed to take to combat the nausea associated with getting radiation therapy. And what the drug does is it makes you fucking tired, man. It knocks you out. So here's how it works. You drive to go get radiation therapy. You get radiation shot into your body. By the time you get home, you start feeling a little sick. Then you start wanting to throw up, but you can't really throw up. It's like feeling car sick. And so you take this pill that's prescribed to you that's supposed to battle the nausea, but the way it's supposed to battle the nausea is by knocking your ass out until your next radiation treatment. That's the way it works. It sucks. So I don't know why. It's really weird, but I actually just was taking this pill instead of consuming marijuana to see if it helped with the nausea. I don't know why I did that. It's really weird. So a few days I'm just taking this pill. I'm getting more and more depressed. I'm so tired. I feel so sick. I'm dreading going to get these radiation treatments. And then Gene, who is one of the guests on today's podcast from LA Speedweed, just to be sweet, came over to my house and gave me some marijuana in the hopes that it would help me combat this nausea that I was having. And so I tried it, and what do you know? It completely worked. It worked, like miraculously worked. Suddenly, I was feeling better. Suddenly, I could eat again. Suddenly, I didn't feel sick. Now, just think about that, man. And, you know, I was getting a relatively small dose of radiation compared to the amount of radiation treatments and chemotherapy that people are getting every single day. Just think about that. Here's a non-addictive substance, a substance that is not physically addictive, that can treat the nausea and loss of appetite that comes from cancer treatments, and the DEA is keeping it away from the people. Can you think of a more demonic thing for a government organization to do? Can you, outside of blowing up kids with drones, outside of all the other stuff that the federal government does here and there, can you think of something worse than keeping a set? Imagine if the DEA categorized penicillin as a Schedule 1 drug. Imagine that, if the DEA was keeping something that was an antibiotic away from the people. Imagine that. That's what they're doing. Only in this case, it's something that anyone, I don't know how you make penicillin, but marijuana is not only this incredibly beneficial substance, but it's also something that anybody with a little pot of soil and a little bit of a green thumb can grow in their homes. For free. All you need is some water and sunlight. You don't have to go to some guy wearing a fucking weird white outfit in a hospital to write magic words on a piece of paper that then you take to some pharmacy enclosed in plexiglass because lunatic rednecks keep attacking it with shotguns and axes because they're trying to get the oxycodone that has to be kept in a bank vault somewhere in the pharmacy. You don't have to do that with marijuana. You can just grow it yourself. And guess what? some of the massive corporations involved in making money by selling things like oxycodone that make people permanently addicted to them and destroy people's lives. They have a lot of money and they want to keep marijuana as a Schedule I drug to force people to consume the poisons that they're putting out on a daily basis. And the DEA has become their henchmen. So the number one drug cartel, the Big Pharma, has as their enforcement arm, has as their paid army, the DEA, who are continuing to support regulations that fly in the face of science and fly in the face of the personal experience and the will of the people. And so this is a sad day, and it's very upsetting to me because a human being's right to take drugs is a sacred right. It's a human rights issue. And something like this is incredibly upsetting. And I know it's just a speed bump. I know it's just a temporary setback in the end of the ridiculous prohibition of marijuana. But any setback, any speed bump, anything that gets in the way of getting a medicine to people who desperately need it is a horrible fucking thing. For example, my mom died of breast cancer, and she was in a lot of pain. She was in a lot of pain, and she didn't like taking pain medication because it made her sick. And so I came to visit her with some marijuana. I had a marijuana tincture, which I gave to her. And she said, this is the first time in months that I felt okay. I gave it to my mom, first time in months. To get that substance to my mom, I had to break the law. I had to break the law to get a substance to my mom who was in pain from cancer. I had to do things that could have landed me in a federal penitentiary to get a substance to my mother to help reduce her cancer pain. That's what the DEA is doing. The DEA is standing in the way of people trying to make their mothers who are dying of cancer hurt a little less. That's what they're doing. And we're paying for them. So friends, we have the information. Information's better. Information's better. Things aren't getting worse. We know that we have two choices. We cannot be complacent. Can't just sit back and pretend that this is okay. We've got to do things, and there are things that you can do. And God forbid, I'm sorry to say this, but you got to talk about it. Are you somebody who consumes psychedelics or marijuana? Are you somebody who takes these substances because they help ease your pain, they help your life in some way? You've got to talk about it. You've got to, as the folks over at, I believe the folks at MAPS are saying this, and forgive me if they're not, come out of the psychedelic closet. Let your voice be heard. Don't be afraid. Tell people about what has just happened and tell people that you take marijuana and it helps your life. So that's my rant on the thing. And of course, you can write your government representatives. And of course, you've got to vote. You've got to vote. Coming up in November in California, for example, on the ballot will be the legalization of marijuana. You have to vote for the legalization of marijuana. You have to go and do this. And you have to talk about it. And you have to get the information to the people who have been brainwashed by the federal government into thinking that this substance is somehow dangerous. You have to get the information to them that shows them that it isn't, to shows them that it does not need to be classified as a Schedule I drug. Shit like this has to encourage us in some way or another to fight harder, to become stronger, to really fight this thing. Because even if you're not a marijuana user, this affects you. This affects you because it's the federal government telling you that they decide what's healthy. They decide what's a medicine and what isn't. They decide what's a poison and what isn't a poison, even if that thing that they have decided is a poison has been shown to be a medicine. How is this any different from some Orwellian? I know it's a little it's such a fucking hack cliche thing to compare this to 1984, but when the federal government says marijuana is a Schedule I drug, they might as well be telling us that 4 is 1, that the number 33 is actually the number 12, and expect us to accept that. We cannot! You've got to talk about it, go to the polls, do whatever it takes to expose the DEA as being a corrupt organization, to expose any of the people who are involved in whatever groups influence the DEA's decision, to expose any of the scientists who are saying that marijuana is somehow a substance as dangerous as oxycodone, to expose all of them as the frauds that they are, to make them feel the shame that must be associated with trying to enforce and to force people into a reality tunnel that does not reflect what's actually happening in the world. I'll just close this thing with a tiny little clip. Here's Terrence McKenna talking about drug legalization.
The whole drug thing, leave alone psychedelics, the whole drug thing is properly understood as a civil rights issue. I mean, people should be able to take whatever drugs they damn well please, in the same way that they should be able to express their sexual preferences, in the same way that women should be allowed to vote. People of low incidence of light reflectivity should be treated like everybody else. I mean, all these things which are perfectly obvious. You cannot have a free society and regulate people's drug use. Any society which sets out to call itself free and democratic with the footnote that certain states of mind are forbidden is headed down the slippery slopes of totalitarianism. There ain't no way this can be avoided. So aside from our belief as a group in the wonderful healing and teaching potential of psychedelics, even if psychedelic drugs didn't exist, I would favor the legalization of all drugs, because I just think that you cannot treat people as though they were infantile. That's called paternalism. That's the old dominator game. We have to just admit, you know, that we're all in this together and that nobody has cornered the market on the truth, for sure.
Friends, we're not going to do a commercial for this episode, but if you feel even the slightest inclination to look into things that you could do to help reform marijuana laws, do me a favor. Go to normal.org. That's NORML.org. Donate, volunteer, check out all the things on that site that you can do in whatever state you happen to be living in to fight back against this kind of nonsense. Also, if you listen to this episode and you like today's guests, then why not go to laspeedweed.com, and if you have a marijuana prescription, sign up for an account and they will deliver some wonderful high-grade plant medicines right to your door. Today's guests are two brilliant entrepreneurs and marijuana activists who run LA Speedweed, which is LA's number one delivery service. They're literally putting their lives on the line so that people can have access to these very important plant medicines. And as a sad preface, I apologize for the weird sound quality of this episode. This is prior to my studio upgrade, so it sounds a little tinny, and the damn Logic metronome invaded the beginning of the podcast. I'm sorry. So now, everyone, please blast volcanoes of sweet astral love in the direction of today's glorious guests, AJ and Gino Gentile.
You
You guys run the top marijuana delivery service in California.
Correct.
And you have you've run into some trouble. Can you talk about it a little bit?
Yes, thanks for having us, Duncan. I really appreciate it. Every time we come out here, it's a great time, and really enjoy doing the show. So you're right, there is some trouble that's going on, but it's not just for Speedweed. It is for the entire medical marijuana industry within California. And not California specifically, but LA specifically, which has laws that are that contradict the laws of the state. So sooner or later, they're going to have to get in line with each other, but they're not in line currently. And what that's doing is hurting the patients. So what the city attorney would like to do for Los Angeles is shut down all of delivery. So it doesn't matter what dispensary or what delivery service, all of it is illegal, which is going to be in violation of state law eventually in 2018. New laws were passed by the governor last year that regulate marijuana. And there was a carve out that for Los Angeles that had Los Angeles had their own set of rules. However, as the rules progress, they're going to be in they'll be controversial because they won't be in line with what the state laws are.
Now, hold on a second. Can I interrupt?
Sure.
All right. I want to quiz Duncan for a second.
Right into the mic.
All right. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Here's a question for you. Have you ever heard of Zoning Ordinance Measure D?
No, I have not.
Okay. Have you ever heard of Assembly Bill 1266?
Nope.
Have you ever heard of Senate Bill 675?
No.
Have you ever heard of Assembly Bill 1575? That's the cleanup bill to 266.
Jesus Christ.
You haven't.
No.
Of course you haven't, because nobody ever pays attention to that kind of stuff.
Right.
Why would you follow a zoning ordinance or an assembly bill or any of that stuff?
Right.
It's hard enough to keep track of what Donald Trump and Hillary and Bernie and everyone else is saying.
Yeah.
To keep track of your zoning ordinance.
Right.
So that's the trouble, and I put that in quotes, that Speedweed has run into. Speedweed's been operating fully state legally since 2010. In 2013, Los Angeles passed a zoning ordinance called Measure D that says this group of dispensaries, there's 135 of them,
yes,
that are designated pre-ICO.
Yes.
Again, we're in the weeds. These 135 dispensaries have legal protection. Everyone else is locked out of doing operating within the city limits.
Right.
So you've got this legal monopoly created by this zoning ordinance, which happened to be written by an attorney who also happens to represent many of these dispensaries. So there's sort of a little quid pro quo happening there, which is common in the city of Los Angeles and in many big cities. And that's kind of where we are today. So deliveries in the city limits are not allowed by anybody, not even the monopoly shops. So the city attorney is saying, if you want your medical marijuana and you're a citizen of LA City, you must go to one of our monopoly shops, and that's that.
Wow.
If you're blind and can't drive, if you have no legs, if you're a retired Marine and you got blown up by an IED and you can't get to the shop, too bad, so sad, find another way. You cannot have marijuana delivered to your house, even though the state says you're allowed to possess it. The state says we're allowed to use the roads. The state says you're allowed to do whatever you want in your home and on your property. The city is saying no to that, no to that, and no to that. So this is a civil rights issue. This is a privacy rights issue. This is a patient rights issue.
Wow.
So
this is essentially someone, I mean, maybe you guys can't say this. You probably can't say this, but it sounds like there's some collusion going on between.
I'll say right here for time immemorial, there is collusion going on within the city. Because how can you allow a zoning ordinance that creates a monopoly to be written by the attorneys that represent those businesses in the monopoly?
Wow.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
How could we, so now the city attorney, as much as I want to throw him under the bus, and he deserves to be under there. I remember this is a re-election year, so pay close attention to who you're voting for.
Who should we vote for?
We don't know yet.
The city attorney of LA, his name is Mike Fuhrer. Mike Fuhrer publicly says that he supports patient access, but it was the will of the voters to pass the zoning ordinance, and as the city attorney, it's his job to enforce it. Now, to me, that sounds like political doublespeak.
Yeah.
If you're the city attorney, and there's this shitty law, the shitty zoning ordinance that tramples on our rights, then as the top law enforcement official in the city, help us out as citizens and say, this is a terrible law, and we need to fix it. Now, everybody in the state knows that this is a terrible law in LA. So when we travel and we go to events throughout California, especially up north where things are kind of settled and mellow, and
yeah,
they understand this is a real industry, they say, what are you guys doing in LA? That's the biggest market in the world for cannabis, and you're messing up everything. You're 10 years behind the laws. And we just shrug our shoulders and say, we're involved, we're part of the process, we talk to the politicians, but they will not listen. So this is politics and money. This is not about protecting children or keeping weed away from parks and churches. This is about keeping the dollars within the 100.
Well, let's go back to what you just said, the idea of keeping weed away from parks and churches. Why? Why keep weed away from parks and churches? Those are perfect places to have weed in your system. In fact, those are two of my favorite places to be high.
Sure, of course.
And I understand that because of your job and you guys have to be aware of all of this stuff that you just said, which to many of us is very confusing, very complicated. To cut to the core of the issue, it's that there shouldn't be any outside agency controlling the flow of a very ancient sacrament into the bloodstream of our species.
Of course, we should be able to control our own consciousness, no matter what it is.
And that to me is the dismaying, shitty aspect of all of this, is that hiding behind all of this, you know, the idea that, first of all, I have to be a patient, right? I have to fit into the role of someone who's sick,
mm-hmm,
if I want to take this thing, which is historically has co-evolved with human beings, is responsible for so much of our culture, our mythology, which is in every single religion of the world, maybe that I'm aware of,
yep,
that every single, for thousands of years, they find cannabis in every part of the world, and yet there's still some fucking asshole who, what's his name?
The city attorney?
Yeah.
That's Mike Fuhrer.
There's a guy named Mike Fuhrer who has placed himself in the position of modulating the flow of nature into the universe via this amazing drug. That's where I go. That's Satanism, if you ask me.
It's absolutely absurd. But he will say, it's the will of the voters. You guys, we put out this zoning measure to keep dispensaries limited, to keep them away from schools. So if you want to limit dispensaries in your neighborhood, I'm cool with that. I don't want a lot of pot shops in my neighborhood. I have a 15-year-old. I don't need him walking by there. But you don't tell me what.
Why don't you want a 15-year-old to walk by a pot shop?
It depends on the pot shop. The typical LA dispensary, especially the ones inside this monopoly, they're sketchy. There's an armed guard out front. You got to buzz through three doors. It's a sketchy looking operation. Now, I've been to some in other parts of California that look like a spa. They're awesome. It'd be totally fine for my teenager to walk by. Totally cool. But most of the LA dispensaries, no, thank you.
Right.
But so, let me get into my home.
Yeah, right. Well, but see, this is the thing. It's like, so what ends up happening, you create a prohibition, mm-hmm, and anytime there's a repression of a natural drive, then their corruption ends up happening, right? So which is why, like, you know, a lot of porn, when you look at porn, a lot of it just has this feeling of like, man, this is kind of like dark. It's got a heavy feeling. If you go into some gun stores, I don't know if you guys ever gone to a gun store,
sure,
in LA.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are creepy, man. Like, they've got a real creepy vibe in there, and a darkness. There's like a shadowy quality to it. So all of these places, they have that shadow, not because of the thing that's being dispensed is innately good or evil, but because there's a sense of having to overcome an unnatural repression against something that shouldn't be repressed. So this is the real problem to me, is these bastards in their imaginary quest to in their imaginary quest to somehow make our children safe. What they end up doing is creating these festering sores all over the city, which are these shops where the people running them act like criminals. And they have to, and because the thing with marijuana itself has been transformed into some kind of evil product of nature, when it isn't, everyone involved in any kind of regulation around it has accidentally become part of an unintentional or intentional conspiracy to make nature seem like it can be flawed. That human, you know what I'm saying? It's like, this is the classic human attempt to place humanity over nature, yep, is what we're talking about. So every single person involved in any kind of regulation against marijuana, can you imagine if somebody tried to regulate wildflowers? If somebody was like, we got to get these fucking daisies out of the parks, because when people see a daisy, it makes them feel like there's something more important than money or something like that.
Right.
It's like that, man. Right. What the fuck? This to me, I'm sorry, I'm going off on a really tangential hippie rant, and I'm taking away your time to talk more about this.
Well, that's okay, because what you're saying is right along our philosophy as well. One of the things I wanted to touch on from what you said before about having to fit into the mold of being a patient.
Yes.
You know, my argument is always that regardless of who you are, if you are using marijuana, you are a patient, because even if you don't, if you're not treating yourself for something, you know, heavy like cancer, if you're getting mood regulation, you are a patient.
Right.
So most people who are smoking marijuana don't really realize that they are a patient, because they think they're smoking and getting high, or smoking and getting creative, or something along those lines. Well, that's mood regulation that the pharmaceutical industry is making billions of dollars off of by giving people Percocets and Wellbutrin,
right,
and all sorts of mood regulating drugs, when marijuana essentially is that mood regulator for millions of people. So regardless of if you have a doctor saying you need medical marijuana for what is ailing you, if you're just using medical marijuana, you are getting that mood regulation, which of course to me makes everyone a patient. So when I was young and started smoking marijuana, I thought I was smoking just to get high, not realizing that it became part of my whole entire life as my mood regulator.
Right.
It wasn't until I got into my 20s that I started thinking of it this way and realizing that by my late 20s that this is what it was doing for me. I have in our family, we have plenty of family members who have tried different mood regulating drugs, and so I realized just in my genetics I probably would be on one of those if I wasn't a daily cannabis user. So for me, I feel like the mood regulation of it makes everyone a patient.
Are you guys familiar with the term exopheromone? Have you ever heard this term?
Mm-hmm.
Terrence McKenna talks about it. You know this term?
I don't, tell me.
So the idea is that the way that plants interact with each other, interact with the outside world, is by putting out these chemical scents, regulators, the chemicals that draw bees to them, chemicals that make birds carry their seeds, chemicals that just, that's the language of the vegetable kingdom.
Sure.
Is that of the chemical release, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that THC, the cannabinoids, are an exopheromone being produced by Mother Earth, because she wants to have a conversation with these super advanced monkeys that are building skyscrapers all over her. And mm-hmm. So when you get into the concept of, and I do appreciate marijuana as a medication, it is a very powerful medicine that treats a variety of ailments. And I as someone who's had radiation therapy, and I can remember they gave me these fucking pills, man, for the nausea. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know why I didn't do it, man. But I was taking these pills. I think I was just so freaked out because I was getting radiation therapy. I was just taking these pills, doing what the doctor said. And I had some speed weed laying around the house. You brought me some.
Right.
But I didn't take it for some reason. I don't even know why. It's so weird, even though everyone's like, oh, this will help nausea. It'll help nausea. It'll help nausea. I don't know why I didn't try. But then suddenly I'm like, man, I can't take these pills anymore. The pills mixed in with the radiation therapy, you're in bed all day. You can barely move. The way that they treat the nausea is by making you knocking you out. That's how they – so I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to, you know, get high and see what happens. So suddenly, in this fucked up, probably one of the most fucked up months of my life, nausea is gone. Just pff, gone. I just feel a little bit more like myself again. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, what a relief. So, man, I know this is a medicine, and I know that it is one of the most powerful, compassionate, incredible substances that we have access to on the planet. But it's not just a medicine. It's a language. It's a communication coming to us from nature. And so when you get these people who act, I think many of them are well-intended. I don't think they realize what they're doing, but it's a form of censorship. And what an awful form of censorship, because it's not as though you're censoring books. It's not as though you're censoring movies. You are censoring the language of nature as it attempts to communicate to humans. And that is one of the most devastating things that you can do, because nature, usually what it tells us is what's really important in life, right? You know? And that's where things get sinister, isn't it? Because the things that it thinks are important quite often are not what people in the government and people who are trying to make money think are important. And that's where shit gets fucked up. Because now you get into some kind of deep conspiracy where people in power are actively attempting to disrupt a transmission coming to us from the earth.
Right. And I think the same holds true for psychedelics, and when you see DMT, MDMA, psilocybin, all these compounds. I don't want to sound too much like a hippie, but there's this extra vibration, there's this higher level of consciousness that you achieve with these different mind-altering chemicals, none of which have been proven to show any harm long or short term.
Right.
And we are not allowed, because some agency says you're not allowed to experience a higher level of consciousness.
Right. That's it.
We need you down here.
That's
where
it.
We can keep a hold of you. Because once you take a nice trip, or you get... I was not a marijuana smoker at all. I was anti until my 30s. But it's made me a nicer guy. It's made me more open to experiences and people. And it has just made me a better person. And I'm not a daily consumer. Before you regulate any type of substance, you should be forced to go on some type of regimen of that substance for a while. And then, because whoever's in charge of the DEA at any given time, if they come out of like a 30-day, instead of detox, we would put you in intox. You come out of like a 30-day intox of cannabis,
yes.
They'd be like, dude, we got to totally make this legal.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Right. Well, there is. That's the other irony in it, is that these people are not consuming the thing because they've been conditioned to think it's poison.
I was.
So me too. We anybody who's our age, and the right now the younger people are in the tail end of this war on drugs.
Right.
But we were in whenever there's a war, there's propaganda. And we have been permanently encoded with some high level propaganda that has taught us that some substances are drugs and some substances aren't drugs. And the substances that are drugs are things like heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, and then somehow shoved in there is marijuana.
Right.
When it doesn't fit in that category. And so a lot of these regulators, that's in their brain, and they don't understand. So where it gets really interesting is, because what I do as the, I guess, the resident hippie here, talking about the language of the earth, man, is I like to demonize these people, and because it's easier. But what's really happening, I had Rick Doblin on this podcast. Rick Doblin is the guy who runs the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies. He's doing such great work right now at getting these substances, psychedelics, tested. And so he deals with the FDA regularly. And a lot of people on that side of the fence, believe it or not, they just care about the data. That's it. They don't care about... They don't have some agenda to keep marijuana away from people or psychedelics away from people. They just have a limited amount of data. And from that limited amount of data, they've created regulations. And a lot of times these regulations are good. If you look at the history of the pharmaceutical company and look at, like, Christ, what was that drug they put out that made it so that babies couldn't grow arms and legs? What was that?
Oh, Jesus.
What was that called? It was called...
Thalidomide?
Yes, thalidomide. You know, that was an example of a pharmaceutical company being incredibly irresponsible, ignoring what was happening. And because of that, a whole generation of people were born permanently disabled.
Right.
So this is why we need the FDA. But they need data. And because of the obstruction of several presidential administrations, they don't have the data. And now they're assembling it. Thanks to people like Doblin. But I found it very refreshing to hear that people on that side of the fence, believe it or not, want humans to be healthy. They
sure.
want humans to feel good. They don't want people to be sick. And there isn't some nefarious thing. But somewhere there is. Somewhere in the fucking telephone. Somewhere is someone stepping on the tube on purpose. And I always wonder, who the fuck is it? Is it the lobbyists? Is it the pharmaceutical companies? They have lobbyists who are against marijuana because they think it's going to reduce their Xanax.
Yes,
is
yes,
that it?
Big alcohol, big tobacco, and big pharma.
And the prison industry.
And the prison industry as well.
So you buy into that. You think that there is the prison industrial complex, their people. This is just where it gets weird. I try to imagine a human being actually thinking to themselves, we must keep marijuana illegal so my prison will stay filled with people. Is that real, man?
It's only part of it. I mean, if you look at people who are in prison for marijuana, it's only people who are moving heavyweight. No one's in prison for
right.
slight possession. They're just not. You'll hear people say that's an argument, but there's not. There's just heavyweight dealers are in prison. But it is but it all adds up to a problem. So you've got the prison union who is very connected to law enforcement. So now you've got law enforcement, like the DEA, that needs to protect their budgets, and we've got $2-3 billion carved out for marijuana enforcement. I've got all these agents. If I don't use my budget, I lose my budget. So what am I gonna do with these guys? So you've got the agencies protecting their budgets. Now you've got big alcohol, doesn't want another mind-altering substance on the market. Big tobacco, we don't need another inhalant. You know, they hate vaporizing. And then big pharma does not need cannabis on the market because cannabis seems to cure every fucking thing you throw at it. It is like the Superman of herbal remedies.
But see, sure. right there, man, that to me, I think if there is a culprit, it must be someone in big pharma because... Imagine if there were like Xanax seeds, like if you could plant Xanax, that would be a disaster. Well, that'd be a disaster for the world because Xanax is one of the most horrendous drugs out there that I'm aware of. It's one of the most satanic drugs on earth. But so here you have CBD, which mm-hmm. my experience with CBD has been so good. I've never encountered anything as wonderful as CBD. It's it relaxes you, helps you go to sleep. It's cure. I had insomnia at one point, I was taking CBD regularly. I don't anymore. But at one point, I wasn't able to sleep. My dad had given me these hardcore fucking barbiturates to like go to sleep. I took them for a few nights. Got really really foggy and sick. It was awful. But then I started taking melatonin and CBD.
Right.
Bam! Out like a light, and now I'm sleeping just fine. And so whatever was fucked up inside of me got
rewired.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that it grows out of the ground.
And the receptors are there just waiting for you to plug into them. I mean, how did we wind up with an endocannabinoid system? By accident or by evolution? You know, it's there for a reason. It's either evolution or happy accident.
Or God.
Or God.
Maybe God wants it.
Whatever you believe in.
You can say either one. If you want to go the religious angle, God created everything. God wants us to have cannabis. Or you can go the evolution angle. Obviously, our bodies are meant to take in cannabinoids into our receptors and process them. So I think both sides of that argument are equally valid.
Well, there does seem to be, I mean, you know, there does seem to, look, if you ask me, I'm going to say God is a term of convenience just because you can put a lot into that category. But if there does seem to be, we don't need to trace it all the way back to some intelligent creator, but it does seem that humans and cannabis have had a very happy relationship for a very long time. I don't think those cannabinoids are just accidentally in there, because it seems like mostly the human organism is very efficient and everything inside of us has some purpose. They're even finding out the appendix might actually be a useful thing that they didn't realize.
Right.
So everything running in the system needs to be there, including the cannabinoids. So it's really terrifying to me to think that there are people in the pharmaceutical industry who are actively attempting to remove us from marijuana, and they're putting people in jail for it, man. So, okay, there's enough of my ranting. This is what I wanted to ask you guys. When did you get the idea to start Speedweed? Because not to sound like I'm like giving you both blowjobs here or anything, but of all the companies on earth, Speedweed is my favorite. It's the best. It's been so wonderful to me. When I had cancer, it was there for me. And let me tell you, man, when you are, I don't mean to keep going back to this, when you are getting radiation therapy, doing anything is like, it's like you've got a weighted vest on, man, okay?
Right.
And not all of us can afford a nurse, and not all of us can, like, have access to help, right? So for me, just like, I can remember the first time I was able to walk up the street to a Starbucks from my house,
mm-hmm.
and what a victory that was. It was like, oh, fuck, I did it, but I had to sleep for like 4 hours after that. So the idea of getting in your car right after you've just gotten radiation therapy and driving to a goddamn dispensary.
In L.A. traffic.
In L.A. traffic to get something that's going to make your nausea go away. What's that guy's name who's stopping this?
That's Mike Fuhrer. Says it's the will of... You voted for this. This is what you voted for, L.A.
Man, Mike Fuhrer, you got to understand that not all of us, even though I clearly am a hippie, not all of us... There's a lot of people in bed right now who can't get out of bed, and they don't have family, and they don't have caretakers, and they're sick, and you're keeping them from getting help. And that's fucked, man. That's fucked. So when I'm around you, I'm sorry, man. This is something that gets me really pissed off, man.
I appreciate that it does.
So
it should. It is absolutely disgusting to have people's rights trampled on like that, and to prevent really sick people from have access to medicine. It's really disgusting. Where we are right now, I don't know if Duncan discloses his location, but where we are right now, you're not allowed, there's no access to medication at where we are here.
Right.
Completely banned. Completely banned. Who did that? And what gives you the right to do that?
Right.
Now, if you want to regulate the number of shops in a city, do that. You want to keep them up to a certain standard, do that. You want to test the meds, do that. But you have to still give us an outlet. It drives me crazy that I can drive down Santa Monica Boulevard and see billboards for Absolute Vodka, billboards for this titty bar, billboards for this crazy thing, but you cannot advertise cannabis anywhere.
No way.
No.
No way. Because it's evil. Because it's evil because these people have been conditioned. Now, okay, so here was my question. Before I went on another self-righteous virtue signaling fucking rant. When did you guys start Speedweed? What's the history here, man? How did Speedweed come into existence?
Well, that's a good question. I guess we're about 6 years old now. I'm from the East Coast, New York City. Both me and my brother originally New Yorkers. AJ moved out here earlier than me. And like he said, he was close to straight edge. He wasn't really a marijuana user.
Right.
So when I came out to California...
straight edge, but I was drinking a third of a bottle of whiskey every night to get to bed, like a lot of Americans are. And that,
right.
That's really, really dangerous. And that part of my life is over thanks to cannabis.
Right.
You know, where now it's a glass of true or wine of wheat a week, where it used to be, all right, just pour in the Jack Daniels in the glass to help me get to sleep.
It's all you got access to. It's the only thing you can get.
It's medicinal.
Yeah. That's
so,
right.
So when I decided to move out here, we were in the technology business, and I decided to move out to California, and because we were partners together and wanted to work on new projects. Once I got out here, day one, I went and I got my driver's license and said to my brother, you know, you're drinking every night, you know, even though it's not a problem, there's probably a healthier way to medicate yourself. And he was playing around with some nutraceuticals and things like that. And I said, why don't you try cannabis? And like he mentioned before, he was almost anti-cannabis my entire life, you know, because I've been a cannabis user since I was 15 years old or so, daily. And even though he didn't hate that I used it. He accepted that I used it because I was still very productive. But he wasn't a user himself. So when I got out here, I pretty much dragged him over to the doctor. I said, "Come with me. Let's just go get a doctor recommendation with me." And I got a little pushback from him.
Sure. What, you were like, no way, man, I'm not going to...
I was absolutely freaked out. We come from a law enforcement family, like generations.
Wow.
Dad is a Hall of Fame NYPD detective.
Wow.
And I was 3 days away from signing a law enforcement contract myself. Gino's got a degree in criminal justice.
Wow.
So, you know, when I was born, the war on drugs began under Nixon, and I grew up with Reagan and Nancy telling me to just say no. And that is in there. And that's still in there now, even in this business this many years. I still feel like we're doing something wrong.
Me too. That's where it's a me too. They got us, man.
They got us. And the younger generation, they're clear of it. I mean, look at the polling, and they're over 70% pro cannabis.
Yeah.
So that's great. So the war on drugs is winding down.
Thank God.
You know, but we're going to need to die in order for righteousness to finally emerge. And I'm willing to throw myself on the grenade.
Yeah.
And you know, as I pass into that next level of consciousness, I'll be looking down at everyone getting baked on Earth and just being like, "We did it, man!"
Yeah,
and that'd be great. but so anyway, I was definitely against going to the cannabis doctor, and this is years ago before it was as professional as it is now.
Yes.
And a quick plug on speedweed.com: you can get your doctor's rec online through a video conference. You don't have to go to some scary.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, and how great was it? So easy, right?
Well, I'll tell you. Here's what's really cool about it, man, is the doctor that I talked to through Speedweed actually like gave me some other recommendations for supplements, and she was amazing, mm-hmm. man. It was really cool. Like, she talked to me a lot about CBD, why it worked. She would talk to me about vitamin D, that if you know, a lot of people have vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah.
It was really, she was very sweet. This was not like other doctors that I've gotten prescriptions from.
Right.
Not that any of them are bad, but a lot of them are so hogtied by the fear of being prosecuted for writing a prescription to the wrong person that they have a very cursory interaction with you that's usually based on filling out forms. But the person I talked to was clearly a well-intended, very sweet doctor, which was surprising to me because usually you expect it to be like a kind of like quick, okay, fine, okay, can't sleep, okay, fine.
Yep.
It wasn't like that at all. She was actually like, why aren't you sleeping? What's going on? Like,
actually seemed to have some compassion.
Yeah, right.
And that is certainly the evolution of our industry and where we're going. And as, you know, cannabis comes into the light, because our first experience with the doctor was sort of shady.
Oh, he dragged me up there to somewhere in San Fernando. It's an office building surrounded by barbed wire that looked like it was Mogadishu. We go into some office with no windows, and there's some crazy girl behind the counter that says, "All right, the doctor will see you both now." So now I'm freaking out, thinking I'm going to have a physical, and I'm going to get naked and sit on the paper next to my brother. We sit down in an unmarked box with this doctor who hardly speaks English, and he looks at me first, which was a terrible idea because I'm already having a panic attack. And he says, "Why do you need weed?" And I'm just staring at him, and I feel my brother staring at me like, "Dude, don't fuck this up." And the doctor sees my anxiety and says, oh, you have stress. And I said, yes. And he says, you have trouble sleep? I said, yes. He goes, you have weed. And he called it weed, and he signed this piece of paper.
Right.
He looked at Gene and said, why do you need weed? And Gene said, I have stress and trouble sleep. He said, oh, good, you have weed. And he gave us these pieces of paper that looked completely illegitimate.
Yep.
But Gene's like, ah, it's fine. And he took me to a dispensary. And thank goodness he took me to a decent one. And that was really my entree into the industry. I had been in L.A. for years and always thought it was a counterculture hippie thing where stoners go and they get their, you know, their sketchy marijuana. I didn't realize there was an actual industry, and I didn't realize there's actually people being helped by this.
Yeah. Well, my experience with the first doctors I went to was like that too. And thank God it's shifting. But very quickly, what do your parents think about this, that you guys are running this massive mm-hmm. marijuana delivery service?
Totally supportive.
No kidding.
As long as we're following the law. Are you guys following the law? Yes. Then we totally support it.
Or do you think some police officers feel frustrated that they have to enforce marijuana laws?
I know that for an absolute fact because mm-hmm. Growing up around cops and almost going that way myself, I still like cops. I think that's one of the most noble professions
Absolutely.
There is. There's plenty of asshole cops. We all know that. We all encounter them. But most people in that profession are noble. Believe me on that. One of my closest friends is a ranking officer in San Diego. He's a ranking officer in Eastern Division. I'm not going to mention his name and get him in trouble. So I asked him, what's going on in San Diego? Because there's a lot of busts going on in San Diego right now. Federal task force, sheriff's department, SDPD, they're knocking people over. And I asked my buddy, what are you guys doing? He says, the feds are here. We got to do what they're told. My guys don't give a shit about this. We don't worry about anybody with, you know, carrying weed because we know that there's no collar there. We know there's no arrest there. So while I'm not going to spend 6, 12, 18 hours of my day in court, I'm not going to get an arrest.
Right.
It's just a kid smoking a joint. I have better things to do with my time.
Right.
You know, my buddy is part of the units that like jump through windows and rescue hostages and,
right.
and you know, fight crime like superheroes. They don't care about a little bag of herb. And I don't think any real cop on the street does. The real cops that go out there that like to do the job, that do the work, that want to help people. Like my dad wanted to help people. And he helped people. His primary tool with helping society was his nightstick. He was that kind of cop.
Right.
He went down Times Square and he cleared the decks. And then it was safe for citizens to walk. He wouldn't care about some kid with a dime bag. He really wouldn't. And cops these days don't. Right.
So this is the, to me, another of the tragedy of this thing is that you get a faction of society that actually wants to help people who will die for you. Cops will die for
right,
you,
yeah,
man.
Of course.
They'll die. These are people who don't know you. They're the ones who come into a building where there's a domestic disturbance. They're the ones who you call when someone is about to break into your house. And then they have to enforce bullshit laws to criminalize a substance that is harmless. And then people start looking at the cops not as heroes anymore. Okay, for example, the other day, I don't know what happened. One of my neighbors was burning some kind of weird shit out of their chimney. I don't know what it was or what's going on, but the whole neighborhood smelled like chemicals. And so the chief of the fire department came to my house because they needed to get my backyard to look at this house. So chief of the fire department, you're like, awesome, fireman, badass, come in, you're a badass, you're a fireman, you were like fighting fires and I don't want my house to burn down because my neighbor ignited it with whatever. So, but a cop, because they've been supporting these bullshit laws, you look at them like, what's wrong with you, man? You're taking people to jail for a thing that grows out of the ground. And so then they don't get what they deserve, which is respect, the kind of respect a hero deserves, which is they're out there trying to make it safe, man.
Yeah.
And if the war on drugs ends and police officers no longer have to support these ridiculous laws, they get to look like heroes again.
They do.
Mostly. Not that there aren't still going to be shitty, racist, backwards, bullshit cops. I'm sure they're going to be out there, but
you always have that.
The public perception of authority is going to shift if the authority are actually enforcing laws that we need, like don't kill each other, don't rob from each other, don't drive drunk because you'll run over people. So that's another casualty of the war on drugs, is the relationship between the population and police officers.
And I got something else to add about that. When we were the only company invited by the Board of Equalization to do a presentation for the entire state on the on transportation within cannabis.
The Board of Equalization, that's the agency in California that controls the taxes. So they're kind of, that's the agency that's sort of spearheading the legislation right now.
Right, like the IRS for California.
Right.
Okay.
You could say. So we were the only retail company that was invited to speak. One of the other people doing this on the panel with us was the Highway Patrol, and they directly said, look, we don't care about marijuana. We just want you to tell us who's the good guy and who's the bad guy.
Wow.
So if you tell us, let's regulate this, and you have a license, and we know you're going from point A to point B with marijuana, you're allowed to. We just want to get the guy who's not allowed, the guy
wow.
who's breaking the laws, the guy
yes.
who's the bad guy. So even the police are frustrated over cannabis because they don't want to have to enforce a law, just like AJ was saying, that's a waste of time for everyone as well. So that's important to take into consideration, that if proper regulation is put forth, they don't have to deal with that anymore.
Right.
But when the city was building their case against us, and I think it's fair that we need to say that, is that the city of LA is suing Speedweed for operating. So you've got that tremendous waste of taxpayer dollars now. Is they're suing us, the company that is working closely with the state government, that is loved by the state government, that the state government looks for guidance. We're being sued by the city in which we live. So while they're putting together this ridiculous lawsuit, my wife and I were followed around for months by a narcotics officer. Now, our narcotics officer is a highly trained, highly talented, highly paid individual. And he spent months following us around, and his report is, saw AJ get into his car and go to the office, saw Jen take their son to school, saw AJ carrying a manila envelope, which could have had cash, but I don't know, I couldn't tell. Months of that.
You saw the report?
Yeah, because it's in the lawsuit. So this is how we're wasting our talented officers' time, is by following around legitimate business people that... You know,
how much do you think they had to pay that guy for that?
What does a narcotics officer make in LA at his rank? 70 grand a year, 80 grand a year, maybe more. If it was New York, it'd be over 100,000 a year. So months building this case against us. And there's no hard facts in the case. It's Speedweed is operating a sophisticated delivery service from at least 7 locations in the greater Los Angeles area. Well, what locations? They're not in the lawsuit. Where are the addresses?
Right.
You know, there's a couple of addresses there, but there's just offices.
How much is the city paying for this lawsuit,
I don't know. That's a question that the media should ask, is what does it cost to enforce this lawsuit? Because the city was happy to just, the city wants a couple of million dollars from us in fines and fees. You're not getting it. We said, well, go to court. And that, you know, the city would like us to resolve this outside of court. Of course they would. I don't want to resolve it outside of court. I want to sit in front of a jury of my peers and explain what Proposition D is doing and what the city has done.
If you paid these fines, $2 million, you could continue to deliver in L.A.?
No, we would bankrupt. We would be personally bankrupt, the business. They've already devastated our business, and they're devastating the entire industry. There's no legal delivery allowed in the city limits, and now cease and desist letters are flying out of City Hall, you know, at a million miles an hour, shutting down every delivery service operating in the open.
So it's a shakedown.
It's an absolute shakedown. But they're not really shaking us down for money. What they're shaking us down for is statistics for the back of their baseball cards, because it's an election year and people are paying attention. And this is the year that the city attorney and the mayor have to announce, do they want to be reelected? What politician doesn't want to be reelected? So now these politicians get to say, Measure D said shut down the dispensaries, so I shut down 400 dispensaries. I shut down 180 delivery services, including Speedweed, the biggest one. I did this, I did that, I did this, so re-elect me.
Because it's very interesting that all the evidence is from years ago against us.
Right, over 2 years.
Right, so why did they said we're an imminent harm to the to society. So why did it take 2 years to put together the suit instead of prosecute it? If we were imminent harm, how come we weren't dealt with right at that point? Why? Because it's an election year. At least that's what
oh my God.
Most of the thoughts are. There are a few other things to consider as well. Proposition D, this lawsuit is not a criminal lawsuit. It's a civil lawsuit. So because we are not violating any criminal law whatsoever, we are in full compliance with California cannabis law. A few other things to consider is that this is a zoning law, and they want to apply this zoning law to our delivery vehicles. Well, zoning law typically is for commercial buildings. You walk into a commercial building, it says occupancy 85
right.
for the room. That's zoning law. You got to post that stuff. So historically, zoning law has not applied to vehicles. If that was the case, when you're getting food delivery from Domino's, you would expect to see an A-rated kitchen, letter in their window.
Sure.
Again, we're talking about zoning law, and that zoning law applies to places within L.A. Well, our business is actually not in L.A.
Right.
We just travel through it. And I know you have a lot of listeners from all over the place.
Yeah.
Every cannabis enthusiast should take a close look at what the cities are doing, because these zoning bans are happening all over California, and nobody's aware of them. So in the city where we're sitting right now, they did that. They zoned cannabis out of this city. You look at cities like Englewood, Hawthorne, all of the South Central, the Bay, it's all banned. Deliveries are banned.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much most of Southern California deliveries are banned, except for a few small pockets.
Is there any chance that in the next few years marijuana will just become legal in California like it is in Denver?
Yes,
but it's going to be a messy road to get there. Because remember all those assembly bills I was asking about
yes.
that you didn't hear, that nobody's heard of?
Yes.
They create a huge bureaucracy. They want to put unions in charge of all transportation. They want anyone using cannabis to register in a database. They want food and agriculture in charge of all the flowers. They want the Teamsters running all the deliveries. They want an extra 15% taxes on cannabis use, which actually just passed, and we all freaked out and signed petitions to get that pulled back. They've lowered it to 10%, but they're not calling it a tax; they're calling it a usage fee. So in some parts of California, you're going to be paying 40% tax on cannabis. What happens when you charge 40% tax? The guy goes on the internet, he finds the dude who's not legitimate, and he just buys his eighth for $40 like always, because he's not going to go to your shop that's certified by the city and pay $100 for it. There's no reason to do that. He
just creates a bigger black market.
Right, and cannabis has survived in the black market for decades very comfortably and very happily.
Sure.
And most people want to stay there. You know, we don't. We
yeah.
follow all the rules, and because we've done that, we put ourselves on the radar as a target.
What do you guys, that's what I want to talk to you a little about, is what does that feel like to be saddled with this kind of responsibility? Because you guys accidentally or intentionally became
mm-hmm.
the top marijuana delivery service in one of the largest cities in the world. And now...
the largest cannabis market.
You guys are now at the forefront of this war for something that, if you don't win it, if you lose this, it could create a horrible cascade that leads to some kind of new form of bureaucratic prohibition that ultimately at the root makes it so that people who are sick have to go jump through extra hoops
mm-hmm.
to get something that makes them feel better that grows out of the ground. What does that feel like, man?
It is fucking frustrating. It is absolutely emotionally devastating and draining, Because what happens is when you create that bureaucracy and all this mess that we have to deal with and the taxes, you take good people like us who are trying to help people. And people think that Speedweed, that we're like burning $100 bills to keep warm, that we're rolling in money. Speedweed doesn't make any money. We haven't made real profit ever because we followed all the rules, paid
right.
the taxes. So what you do now with this bureaucracy is you push people like us out because I'm at the point where I just want to throw up my hands and say, you know what? You guys are fucking it up. I'll come back in 5 years when you figure out that everything you're doing is going to make it worse.
Right.
So you push us out, and then the black market thrives. So this Proposition D and the city attorney, Mike Fuhrer, and the city LA City Council are the best friends that the black market can have. The assembly bills that are running through Sacramento right now, the best friends the black market
That's
can have.
Scary, man.
I said this very thing in Sacramento, in the Capitol, in front of everybody. I said, you guys are going to create a black market that's already thriving, and this is rocket fuel. Because you can't take people who don't follow the law and give them new laws to follow. They're not going to do them. You can't
right.
take people who don't pay taxes and give them more taxes to pay.
Right.
They won't pay taxes. So all you're doing is burdening us, and eventually we're just going to say, there's no money in this for us.
Right.
You know, I can't make my 30 grand a year anymore. You know, that's what we make. Our employees make more money than the owners do because we were trying to build something of value that would kind of ride this wave of industry into the next phase. Instead, we're saddled with lawsuits and regulations and taxes and all this nonsense that just makes you go, you know what? We'll take our talent and maybe we'll go do something else. You know, maybe we'll go build wooden sheds or mini houses.
No.
Right. Or I'll raise beagles or something.
Don't raise beagles.
Smart, talented people will find other things to do. So don't you want them here? Don't you want good people here in this industry?
And we should talk about the balance of harm that to our company.
Money in beagles, though. By the way, I
am thinking that of the things you listed, one of them is raising beagles. That's so weird.
Believe me, I'm not going to let him do that.
You love beagles?
I kind of like beagles. Beagles is a good dog.
Why did that come out of your mouth?
I don't know.
Did your mind just manufacture beagle raising?
My brother, a lot of years here, I've never even heard him use the word beagle.
No, I think I might have been quoting an old Firefly episode or something. I think it's a Firefly.
So maybe beagles are in our future. I think that it's important to talk about the balance of harm to a company. Let's just take cannabis out of it. We're trying to operate legally and do everything the right way. Well, we've had to lay off 65 employees that were paying taxes.
Right.
And also, by doing this, they lose tax revenue from us. Now,
and all those people are on unemployment now.
Right, and so there's a balance of harm to those people and just to our company in general, but also let's talk about the money that they're going to lose in taxes by doing this.
Right.
L.A. needs money. L.A. needs tax money from cannabis or anywhere else. They need tax money. So why cut out tax money when people just want it regulated and do it the right way? There's obviously a demand. The demand isn't from criminals. The demand is from citizens who are taxpayers, who are voters. Why would we take away money that is going to the state? We should regulate it and allow that money to flow fairly from the end user to the government. So, of course, we don't want it to be unfair and taxed too heavily, but at least give that legal way for regulation so that the city doesn't have to lose that tax money. I believe as of last year, the cannabis industry paid taxes on $2 billion in L.A. alone.
Wow.
Now, they pay taxes on that. So, but still, you know, calculate it, you know, at the 40% level or whatever it is. That's a lot of money that's being lost by the city.
So what
Why
do we do?
It?
What do we do? What can we do? What can people living in California or not living in California, what can we do during this election year to make you guys succeed in your pursuit of having a legitimate marijuana delivery service, not just in LA, but hopefully all over the country eventually.
Sure.
What can we do?
Well, let's talk about California first. Just so everyone listening realizes, we are open in the rest of California that there where there aren't bans. So we offer overnight Amazon Prime type service by medical courier that will come to your house the next day. So that's open in all of California. But where places are banned, like LA, we can't deliver there.
Right.
So what Californians could do is certainly join our collective, use us, because the larger our base is, the more ammo we have to show why this is legitimate and why it's a needed service throughout California.
Right.
Okay, we have on our site, go to speedweed.com/LA ban is one word. That there's a petition there that you can read a little bit about what's going on with the ban, and just put your name in there and a comment about why you think it's unfair. We'll get that to the politicians.
Is that effective? Do you think that would work?
I know for a fact that they're paying attention to us. I know that for an absolute fact. An advantage to being Speedweed is we have eyes and ears everywhere, including City Hall. We have great relationships with attorneys around the city, good relationships with law enforcement, good relationships with politicians in the city. We know that they're paying attention to us. Every time Speedweed is mentioned in the media, City Hall forwards that mention to our attorney as a way of them saying that they're keeping an eye on us.
That's cool.
So that's cool. So we know that the city attorney is going to listen to this, and that's just fine. We have over 3,000 signatures in our database right now, and we're going to start sending those to City Hall one by one by one until they get the message. Proposition D, as it stands, is going to change this year, most likely. What they're going to do is take the Proposition D shops, the monopoly shops, and codify them within state law to make them the only shops that can operate within the city limits. And that just came through the city council last week. Delivery is not mentioned there. So delivery is still banned inside the city limits of LA. And sorry to all you guys who have been using our service and loved it, we can't get to you. You're using a different service, they're drug dealers, according to your leadership. So how do we change this? You got to get out and fucking vote. It really makes a difference. So first vote for Gary Johnson. So there's a shout out to Gary,
absolutely,
the president.
That was going to be my next thing to mention, that on the national level, you should support Gary Johnson for president. Right now he's polling at 10%. And if we get him to 15%, he gets on the national debates. And that's what we really need. Because his voice is an important one. Former governor of New Mexico, who is a supporter of cannabis, and would deschedule cannabis. So it would be very important for our industry, especially even if his agenda is just heard.
Got it.
Yep.
So that's it. Vote for Gary Johnson. Keep your ear to the ground, guys. Go to Speedweed. Fill out this. Fill out the petition. I have filled out the petition. Let the people who are getting in the way of this stuff know what's up. Because really, some of us, we're having marijuana delivered because we're too lazy to drive to a marijuana shop. Sure, there's a contingent of us that are doing that. But even so what?
It
should be free to do that anyway. But there's some of us, whoever is listening in City Hall, if someone is actually listening, people get sick and marijuana makes us feel better. And it's real. It's not just a bunch of hippies making something up. It's real. You are obstructing sick people from getting medicine. And these two people here are the sweetest humans I've ever met. These are not criminals. These are good people who are just trying to run a successful business. And by the way, a successful business. I said business. God damn it. What a terrible way to end that. But here's the thing, man. Here's the thing. When you say we're not even making money, I say make money. If anybody deserves to profit, it's folks who are at the forefront of a major human rights issue, putting their asses on the line. Because that's what you're doing, man. You're getting trailed by federal agents. Come on. Federal agents are following you when you drive your kid to school? Come on, man. And you're acting like it's not a big deal. That's a big deal. That's fucked, is what that is. Because you guys are doing nothing wrong. So anyway, that's my say on it. You already know how I stand, guys. You too. Thank you so much for what you do here. Thanks for coming on the show. Keep me posted. Let me know how I can help in any way, because this is a bunch of bullshit, and I want you guys to be okay. No sure. Beagles. No Beagles.
Thanks, Duncan.
That was AJ and Gino from LA Speedweed. Go check them out at laspeedweed.com. Please do not forget to go to normal.org. See what you could do to help in some way reform these ridiculous marijuana laws. Thank you guys so much for listening. I will see you next week with a wonderful conversation with one of my dear friends, Zach Leary. Have a great weekend. Hare Krishna.